The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, and welcome! I'm so glad to have you here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, broadcasting out of Brookings Harbor, Oregon, on KCIW 100.7 FM on your radio dial, and anywhere in the world, any time of day, from whatever device you would like to be on the podcast. That's right! You can pick us up on the pod, you can be here live in person on the radio, or you can just, you know, take us with you wherever you're going. We love to have you as part of the Ocean Mist Power Hour. Now, we are broadcasting from Brookings Harbor, the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest. It's about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. It's the home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and the nicest people you'll ever meet. And I mean that from my heart. We have got some terrific people here. No guest for you today. We're going to talk about something really intense, but it's not a guest. Right here where the mountains and the giant old-growth redwoods meet the sea, Harbor Brookings is home to me. Now, before we get started, I'd like to say thank you to the entire KCIW sound engineering and production crew. Thank you so much to all of the professionals behind the scenes that help make the Ocean Mist Power Hour a fun place to be for just an hour. I'm your hostess, Misty Young. I am not a doctor. I am not a scientist. But I do talk a lot about health and nutrition. I do hold a nutritional therapist certificate from the Health Sciences Academy and a plant-based nutrition certificate from E. Cornell University's T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. Now, one of my all-time favorite people in the whole wide world is Dr. Michael Greger. And you've heard me talk about Dr. Greger before. The guy's amazing. His grandmother, quick and dirty story, at age 65, with all kinds of heart surgeries and plaque buildup and difficulty and chest pain, had gone through every surgery you can imagine, was essentially sent home to die. They said, gee, Mrs. Greger, we can't help you any further. It's time for you to go home. Science has nothing left to offer you. Medicine has nothing left for you. So she went home to die. And little Michael Greger was devastated that his grandmother came home to die. Cut to 31 years later when she finally did die. And by that time, Dr. Greger had gone into medical school. Why? Because his grandmother heard about Nathan Pritikin, who also was not a scientist, who also was not a doctor, who was an engineer, but discovered that plant-based living would make a difference for people's hearts. And so he opened a clinic, and Mrs. Greger went to that clinic in a wheelchair, unable to walk, stand, move around freely, whatever. Again, remember, she was sent home to die. So at age 65, she's sent home to die. Instead, she goes out to see doctor, or not doctor, but to see Nathan Pritikin, follows his protocol in 10 days after arriving there in a wheelchair, unable to stand, move, walk, hike, anything. In 10 days, on his program, all plant-based living, she's walking 10 miles a day. Now, if you live here in Brookings Harbor, let me just tell you, that's one third of the way, maybe almost half the way from here to Crescent City. You do the math on it. It's not that difficult to realize that when you change the environment inside your body, you change the habitat for your cells begin to change. And that's what Dr. Greger's grandmother experienced. So being sent home to die to 31 years later, bam, she finally dies in her 90s. Isn't that amazing? So Dr. Greger says, for those of you unfamiliar with my work, every year I read through every issue of every English language nutrition journal in the world so you don't have to. Every year his talks are brand new because every year the science is brand new. Now today we're going to talk about From Table to Able, combating disabling diseases with food. It's kind of interesting, isn't it, to think about combating disabling diseases with food. You think about Dr. Greger's grandmother and her incredible situation. That goes back decades, doesn't it? Because she died years and years ago. And now here, Dr. Greger's probably getting close to the end of his career. And you can read all about him on his amazing website, nutritionfacts.org. In fact, I want to encourage you to go to nutritionfacts.org. You know I'm a nutritional therapist, and you know I hold a plant-based certificate, but I get a ton of my information from nutritionfacts.org. Why? Because Dr. Greger, after reading, as he said, every issue of every English language nutrition journal in the world, He then compiles all the most interesting, the most groundbreaking, the most practical findings to create new videos and articles every day for his nonprofit site, nutritionfacts.org. Now, I'm going to say that name again a lot throughout this broadcast and podcast because I want you to hear it. I'm encouraging you to take your own health and fitness into your own hands. Everything on nutritionfacts.org is free. Everything on the website is free. There are no ads, no corporate sponsorship. It's strictly non-commercial. Dr. Greger doesn't sell anything. He just puts it up as a public service. He says it exists because thousands of people donate to support the 501c3 nonprofit charity that keeps nutritionfacts.org alive. And thanks to that support, in less than a few years, nutritionfacts.org ramped up to a total of 25 million page views, now with more than a million new hits every month. Look, people are hungry for evidence-based nutrition, and that's what I want you to know that you're going to get when you listen in on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. You're going to get evidence-based nutrition. Someone actually got in my face last week after I did the prostate cancer and prostate health podcast and broadcast and said, well, the human prostate's just not designed to live past 60 years. That's just it. It's got a lifespan of 60 years. And I'm just not fast. You know, I'm not quick on my feet. I don't think about these things in the moment. Like 2 days later, the response comes to me, which always drives me nuts because you see those people in debates and on stages and stuff. They're like, oh, really? Well, bup, 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 bup. And they're able to just respond right away. I can't do that. But it occurred to me to ask this person who actually diagnoses prostate cancer on a regular basis. I should have said, wow, really? I'd be really curious to know if the next 10 diagnoses of prostate cancer that you do, I'd be curious to know if you would ask a follow-up question. What is your nutrition program? Are you on the standard American diet? Are you vegetarian? Are you vegan, plant-based? What's your nutrition program? I'm willing to bet, A, the person wouldn't ask those questions, and B, I'm also willing to bet that the vast majority of people who are dealing with prostate cancer are also deeply involved in the standard American diet. That's ham, bacon, or sausage every morning, chicken tacos for lunch, burger or a steak for dinner, day after day after day after artery clogging day. It doesn't serve your body. It doesn't serve us in any way. What does serve us? Vegetables, fruits, grains, nuts, seeds, all those things made from them. Green beans, onions, garlic, mushrooms, berries, all these foods that grow out of the earth that take sunshine. Convert it into energy that you can put into your body. When you think about eating fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds, and what comes from those, what is it? It's literally eating the energy of the sun. Now, what could be a better energy source for us than the sun? Nothing that I can think of. Just nothing. It's just amazing. All right, well, that was a good rant and a good introduction to this topic today, which we're going to talk about combating disabling disease with food. Now look, we know that Dr. Greger explores the role of a healthy diet in preventing, treating, and reversing our deadliest diseases. And this year, in this particular episode that we're going to review, he says he wants to address some of the leading causes of disability. We want to live a long, healthy life, not a long, miserable one. I would agree with that. Now, heart disease is not only our leading cause of death, but also our leading cause of death and disability. So Dr. Dean Ornish, who gets quoted a lot on this show because Dr. Dean Ornish, decades ago, proved that not only could you stop heart disease, but you could literally reverse heart disease by changing the standard American diet to a plant-based diet. So he says, Dr. Dean Ornish proved with his plant-based diet and lifestyle program that cardiac patients had a 91% reduction in angina attacks. That's the crushing chest pain that some people with advanced heart disease can get. That's what angina is. In contrast, control group patients who were instead told to listen to the advice of their doctors had a 186% increase in attacks. What? What? Are you hearing this? Who do you know that has heart disease? Is it you? Your wife, your husband, your kids, your cousins, your mom, dad, did your family experience this? Heart disease is the number one killer in America. Men and women, all of us. Heart disease, where does it come from? It comes from the cells bathing in stuff that's not appropriate for them. And how does the bath that our cells are bathing in, how does that happen? Where does it come from? It comes from what we put in our mouths and what we put on our bodies and from the environment we live in. If we live in toxicity or eat toxicity or drink toxicity, we gonna get some toxicity. You see that connection? We gonna get it, right? All right, thanks for letting me go hillbilly on you there for a second. Dr. Ornish said, the marked reduction in chest pain was sustained even 5 years later. A long-term reduction in pain comparable to that of bypass surgery, but without the knife or the saw used to cut our chest in half. Forks over knives, soup over saws. I love that. That's pretty cool. But this was back in the 1990s, when Dr. Ornish was studying only a few dozen patients at a time. How about 1,000 patients on a whole food plant-based diet? Well, within 3 months, nearly three quarters of angina patients became angina-free. Remember, that's the crushing chest pain that people with heart disease get. 74% of them cured without a single scalpel or side effect. Isn't that phenomenal? I love to hear that. No scalpels, no side effects, forks over knives, soup over saws. Now, Dean Ornish didn't only or just put people on a plant-based diet. He also advised moderate exercise like walking. So how do we know what role the diet played? Well, if you go back to Ornish's first publication, he put cardiac patients on a quasi-vegan diet. Now, what's a vegan diet? It means no animal products of any kind with no added exercise, right? So let's go back and see that again. He said, if you go back to Ornish's first publication, he put cardiac patients on a quasi-vegan diet with no added exercise, just diet and stress management, and he got a 91% reduction in attacks in less than a month. And Dr. Esselstyn, who's one of my absolute heroes, Dr. Esselstyn was able to improve angina using a plant-based diet as the only lifestyle intervention. So we know that diet is the active ingredient. Dr. Esselstyn is impressive too. So, I mean, if you go out onto the web and you go to nutritionfacts.org, which I'd really like to encourage you to do, if we talk about any charts, any graphs, all of these are available to you on nutritionfacts.org. And you know what's really cool about it is Dr. Greger not only says everything on the site is free, he grants worldwide use and permission for every bit of his information to be repurposed, republished, rebroadcast. So he gives a Creative Commons license for people like me to say, wow, this is so phenomenally transformative in life that I want to share it with as many people as possible. That's why I'm here. Guys, that's why I'm here. You know, I love the Ocean Mist Power Hour right here on KCIW FM 100.7 in Brookings Harbor, Oregon, because we get a chance here to talk about living longer, healthier lives. If you knew that you could stop heart disease, wouldn't you want to? If you knew you could stop cancer in your body, wouldn't you want to? If you knew you could do that, wouldn't you choose that? Well, I think most people would. So coming back to this idea, we know that diet is the active ingredient, but you know those case studies weren't the first. There are a series of case studies going all the way back into the 1970s that we've known about this for decades. Angina and the vegan diet, for example, not using someone's full name, they talk about a gentleman whose name is Mr. F.W. He had chest pain so severe that he had to stop every 9 or 10 steps. But he started on a vegan diet, not even a low-fat vegan diet, just a vegan diet. And months later, he climbed mountains without pain. God, we live in such a wonderful place here in Brookings Harbor. And wherever you are in the world listening in on the podcast, you probably live in a wonderful place too. I know you do because you live on Earth. I don't know. Maybe we're intergalactic. Maybe somebody in another planet is listening to us. Wherever you are, there's probably a place for you to get out and walk. And that's all they had Mr. F.W. doing. This is interesting. Check this out. Because vegetarian arteries dilate 4 times better than arteries of omnivores, you can put people on a plant-based diet for a year and their clogged arteries literally get cleaned out. 20% less plaque in their arteries at the end of the year than at the beginning. Now, put people on a low-carb diet, a meat-heavy, Atkins-like diet, though, and their condition worsens, 40 to 50% more artery blocking at the end of the year. Guys, I'm not the scientist. I'm just delivering the science, but you got to pay attention to this. Do you have any plaque in your arteries? Do you have any kind of difficulty breathing or pumping your blood through your body? Is your heart being assaulted by your diet? Because that's what it comes down to. When we use our forks and our fingers and put food up to our face, What if we're assaulting our heart? Well, that's what we're doing when we're eating animal products. Here's some representative heart scans. Now, I'm not going to go through and tell you all the gory details because I am. And what I want you to do is I want you to go to nutritionfacts.org and I want you to look up the video called From Table to Able so you can see these charts. Now, I'm not going to put them on the Facebook site because that's too easy for you. You can either click and go to Facebook, which I'm not going to do it for you, or you can click and go to nutritionfacts.org, search for From Table to Able, and listen to this. He says, here's some representative heart scans. The yellow and particularly red scans represent blood flow to the actual heart muscle through the coronary arteries. They're showing the results of a patient who went on a plant-based diet and their arteries opened right up, increasing blood flow. The person, however, had started out with pretty good blood flow, but after a year on a meat-based diet, their blood flow significantly clogged down. Now, this isn't measuring risk factors, but actual blood flow to the heart muscle. Plant-based versus meat-based diets. No wonder a recent meta-analysis, that means an analysis of other analyses, found that low-carb diets associated with significantly higher risk of death all-cause mortality in the long run, meaning those on low-carb diets live, on average, significantly shorter lives. Isn't that weird? Doesn't that blow your mind? I mean, you've heard me talk about this before because I'm on my soapbox and I can't help it. The real truth is, these four words are just, they're burned into every single groove in my brain. Ready for it? Ready? It's a writer downer. Confused people do nothing. And how confused are we as a society? Every magazine, every headline says, you can do this and lose 20 pounds by eating meat. You can do that and lose 50 pounds by going low carb. You can try a vegan diet. You can try a vegetarian diet. You can go fish only. It's so confusing. None of us really know what to do. But again, I'm giving you information here that is from the scientists. Okay. So what is science? It's simply observation. That's all science is. It's observation and then using those observations to make a theory. That's it. So if we now have an observation and a theory that tells us that eating a meat-based diet will clog your arteries, hello. Wouldn't you want to unclog your arteries by putting sunshine in your heart? What's the best way to get sunshine in your heart? Apples, oranges, cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, kale. Come on now, how many more vegetables are there? Potatoes, tomatoes, avocados, onions, green beans. You know, the list just goes on and on. Try your best to get organic because you also don't want to put pesticides in your body. Wow. Now, there's a new category of anti-angina drugs. Now, remember, angina is crushing chest pain. But before committing billions of dollars to dishing them out, maybe we should take a more serious look at dietary strategies. To date, these strategies have been marginalized by the drug pusher mentality of orthodox medical practice. Presumably, doctors feel most patients would be unwilling or unable to make the substantial dietary changes required. Now, while this may be true of many patients, it's certainly not true for all. And in any case, angina patients deserve to be offered the plant-based diet alternative before being shunted to expensive surgery or drug therapies that can have a range of side effects and never really get to the heart of the problem. Now, in response to this paper, this is interesting, a drug company executive wrote a letter to the medical journal and said, quote, although diet and lifestyle modifications should be part of a disease management, he said, many patients may not be able to comply with the substantial dietary changes required to achieve a vegan diet, end quote. So, of course, everyone should go on their fancy new drug called renolazine, sold as Renexa. It costs about $2,000 a year to take it, and the side effects aren't horrible, and the drug works. Collectively, the studies show that at the highest dose, the drug may prolong exercise duration in angina patients as long as 33.5 seconds. Wow! It does not look like those choosing the drug route will be climbing mountains anytime soon. Plant-based diets aren't just safer and cheaper, but can work better. I love it. That, you know, I know that was a rant, and I'm not even going to apologize for it. I'm not. What I'm going to say to you is, you are 100% in control of what goes in your mouth. 100%. You get to choose it. You get to pick it. I know you hear this. If you've listened to this podcast or broadcast ever, You've heard this so many times. You're like, does she say it every time? Yes, I do. I say it every single time. Why? Because A, it's true. B, your health, your longevity, your vigor, your energy, your zest, your zeal for life depends on what goes in your mouth. And you're in charge of it. Don't tell me, oh, well, you know, my wife cooks for me, so I'm not in charge. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You're absolutely in charge. Unless your wife is tying you down. And I'm only saying the wife thing because I'm a wife and I cook most of the meals in our house. I cook. I love to cook. And I do a great job cooking all kinds of plant-based things. And I never have to tie my husband down and pry his jaw open and force feed him plant-based food. I don't have to do that. Just like you don't have to get force-fed meat, cheese, milk, ice cream, sour cream, butter, you know, all those things. And you've heard me say this before too, and I'm saying it again, beef molecules in any format, whether it's meat, which is muscles, or liquid meat, which is milk, cheese, cream, sour cream, ice cream, butter, the molecules in that product are 800% bigger than human molecules. Your body simply does not know what to do with them. Oh, your body will figure it out. It will process those, but it's not a pretty thing that's happening inside. Well, let's talk a little bit about COPD as a leading killer. And what about low back pain like sciatica? Well, now low back pain, this is what Dr. Greger is saying, became one of the biggest problems for public health systems in the Western world just in the second half of the 20th century. Chronic low back pain affects about 1 in 5, disabling 30 million Americans. It's an epidemic. Well, are people just lifting more heavy stuff? No. Mechanical factors such as lifting and carrying probably do not have a major role in the disease. Well, then what causes it? Dr. Greger says, I've touched on it before. Atherosclerosis can obstruct the arteries that feed the spine, and this restriction in blood flow can cause, quote, back problems. This can be seen on an angiography, showing normal spinal arteries on the left, clogged on the right, or on autopsy, where you can see how the openings to the spinal arteries can get squeezed shut by these cholesterol-filled plaques. Autopsy, because back pain can predict fatal heart disease, just like clogs in the penile arteries, erectile dysfunction, can precede heart attacks because it's the same disease. Inflamed, crippled, clogged arteries throughout the body. Wow, that just blows my mind. Well, now we have MRI imaging, which can show the narrowing of spinal arteries in people with back pain and the degeneration of the discs, all linked to high cholesterol. Those with narrowed arteries appeared about 8.5 times more likely to suffer from chronic low back pain. This just makes sense, you know. The discs in our low backs are, quote, the largest avascular tissue in the body, end quote, meaning they have no blood vessels. So nutrition just kind of has to diffuse in from the edges. So they're particularly vulnerable to deprivation. Using MRIs, you can measure the effects of this impaired blood flow on the diffusion, and you can see how this can turn into that. So by age 49, 97% of the discs of those eating a standard American diet show at least Stage 2 degradation, starting in our teens even. Our discs are already starting to degenerate by age 11. Now, as Dr. Greger has talked about in the past, nearly all kids eating the standard American diet have the beginnings of atherosclerosis by age 10. That just hurts my feelings, you know. Really, I've got 4 grandchildren. 2 of them are 8. 1 of them is 5. 1 is just 1.5 years old. And I'm thinking about what they eat. When they come to see Gaga and Papa, let me tell you, they're Mr. and Mrs. Plant-based kids all the way around, and they never complain. I mean, I make them all kinds of things like zoodles with mushrooms and potatoes. Zoodles are zucchinis that have been, you know, you put them on a spiralizer and then you make these long noodles out of them and you toss them into a little, a pan and you saute them a little bit with some mushrooms and some potatoes and a bunch of garlic. Kids chow them down, man. They love it. And they never complain about that food. But when they're not with me, I think they're eating the standard American diet. Although, in fairness, both my daughters, they get hammered on a little bit by their mama. You know, I'm always talking about how we can eat healthier and be healthier and drink healthier and, you know, make better choices. And I think actually both the girls are doing a great job in improving the diets of those kids. But Dr. Greger says, sadly, low back pain is now common among children and adolescents, and it's getting worse. Just like children getting adult-onset diabetes, teenagers are starting out their life with a chronic disease. That's why it's never too early to start eating healthy. To get you back into circulation, you need to get circulation to get your back. You know, I got to say this for a second. It's also never too late to start eating healthy. Now, I wish I could say that, you know, I started eating healthy when I was a kid and I didn't. I ate the standard American diet until I was age 49. I'm 57 now. I've been on a plant-based diet for almost 8 years. It'll be 8 years in about a month or so. And in that time, in the 8 years since I've been on a plant-based diet, I've discovered far more energy, more mental clarity. When I go to the doctor, it's always funny. They say, okay, now, you know, give us your list of medications. I'm like, I don't take any medications. Oh, okay. Well, what vitamins are you on? I don't take any vitamins. Oh, once in a while I take D or B, but other than that, I eat so healthy, and I'm encouraging you to do the same. I hope I caught all those problems in time. Now, I'm also one of these freaky people that loves doing blood work because I really love to know what are my numbers. I mean, I feel like, hey, if science is going to know, you know, how to address any problems in my body, well, then science is going to start at the numbers, right? I mean, if you go to the doctor, you say, I don't feel very good, blah, blah, blah. First thing they want to do is draw some blood, right? Oh, well, let's check your sugars. Let's check your cholesterol. Let's check out your liver functioning, all those things. And so although I have the absolute Cadillac plan of health insurance, it doesn't cover some of these advanced biomarkers. I don't care. I whip out the checkbook and I say, I want the advanced biomarkers. And I go get them. And I get them regularly. Like I have standing orders. Literally, my doctor has given me standing orders so I can get these advanced biomarkers. And guess what? They're all really good. And all my doctors are always surprised. They're like, well, why are your numbers so good? I'm like, well, you know what? I make an effort for one thing. And if you know me, you're going to say, well, Misty, you still have like 15 pounds on your body that you're carrying around. I know, it just drives me nuts. I try so hard on that. It's not going away. So yeah, I still want to lose 15 pounds. But other than that, things are looking good. Why did I go on that rant? Because I want to encourage you. If you're 49 or 57, it doesn't matter. If you're 65 or 70, I have a friend who's 83. He just started a vegan diet because he got prostate cancer and he wants to turn it around. I encourage that. I encourage you to think about what's at the end of your fork, what's on your fingers, what's going on, the food to your face. There's four F's right there, right? Fingers, fork, food, face. You get to decide. What about strokes? You know, having a stroke can be severely disabling. And thankfully, high dietary fiber intake, which is to say whole plant foods, may help prevent strokes. The belief that dietary fiber intake is protectively associated with some chronic diseases was postulated more than 40 years ago, and since has been enormously fueled and kept alive by a great body of science. Today, we therefore believe that eating lots of fiber, eating a lot of whole, unprocessed plant foods helps prevent obesity, diabetes, and cardiovascular diseases such as stroke. Now, check this out. Dr. Greger says from nutritionfacts.org in the video From Table to Able that stroke is the second leading cause of death worldwide, a leading cause of disability. And so, preventing strokes in the first place, what's called primary prevention, should be a key public health priority. Now, based on all the best studies to date, different strokes for different folks, depending evidently on how much whole fiber they've been getting or eating, notably increasing fiber just 7 grams a day may decrease stroke risk 7%. And 7 grams is easy, like a small serving of whole grain pasta with tomato sauce or an apple. It's super easy. You know where you don't get any fiber ever, at all, ever? Meat, cheese, bacon, ham, sausage, butter, sour cream, ice cream, none of those. Milk, no fiber, no fiber, no fiber. But hey, if you really don't want a stroke, well, we should all try to get at least 25 grams a day of soluble fiber, which is found in beans, oats, nuts, and berries, and 47 grams a day of insoluble fiber, which is found primarily in whole grains. Now, one would have to eat an extraordinarily healthy diet to get 72 grams of fiber a day. That's a huge amount of plants. Yet these cutoff values could be considered the minimum recommended daily intake of fiber to prevent strokes. Now, they admit these minimums are higher than is common and arbitrarily proposed as adequate. So, you know, what do we want to be patronized to as to what authorities think is practical? Or do we just want to have them tell us what the science says, as they did here, so we can make up our own minds? I don't want to be patronized. I don't want to be patted on the head and told, there, little girl, just eat the standard American diet and all will be fine. And if you get sick, we'll give you a pill or we'll saw your chest in half and open it up and fix your heart. No. How about telling me to eat apples and oranges and bananas and lemons and zucchinis and all of that stuff? Yes, no one needs to tell me that. And I'm hoping no one needs to tell you that. And I'm encouraging you to go find this information. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist, but the science is out there. I'm just the messenger. You can't be a sheep in life and get ahead. You just can't. We can't do this thing that I keep harping on about confused people do nothing. Don't be confused. Find out for yourself. You don't have to become a scientist. Go to nutritionfacts.org and read the science yourself. You don't have to be a scientist to understand it. And that's what I love about Dr. Greger's work. He makes it understandable. Right? Doesn't it make it easy? Isn't this easy to understand? This is interesting. Someone funded by Kellogg's wrote in to complain that, in practice, having that much fiber is unachievable. Rather, the message should just be, the more the better. You know, have a bowl of cereal or something. Now, the real Dr. Kellogg, who was actually one of our most famous physicians, credited for being one of the first to sound the alarm bell about smoking, may have been the first American physician to have recognized the field of nutrition as science. Today, he would be rolling in his grave if he knew what his company had become. That's what Dr. Greger says. What about diabetes, our seventh leading cause of loss of life? It's also our eighth leading cause of loss of health. Up to 50% of diabetics eventually develop neuropathy, which is damage to the nerves. It can be very painful, and the pain is frequently resistant to conventional treatments. In fact, supposedly no effective treatment exists for diabetic neuropathy, so doctors are left with just steroids and opiates and antidepressants, anything, to try to mediate the suffering. But 20 years ago, a remarkable study was published on the regression, the reversal, of diabetic neuropathy with a plant-based diet. 21 diabetics suffering with moderate or worse painful neuropathy for up to 10 years were placed on a whole food plant-based diet. Years and years of suffering, and then complete relief of the pain in 17 out of the 21 patients within days. Numbness noticeably improved too. And the side effects were all good. They lost 10 pounds, their blood sugars got better, their insulin needs dropped in half. And in 5 of the patients, not only did their painful diabetic neuropathy get cured, so apparently was their diabetes. Normal blood sugars, off all medications, diabetics for up to 20 years, and then off all their drugs in a matter of weeks. Wow. And not only that, their triglycerides and cholesterol improved too. High blood pressures got better. In fact, in about half of the hypertensives, an 80% drop overall in the need for high blood pressure medications was seen within 3 weeks. Now, we've known that plant-based diets can reverse or cure type 2 diabetes and hypertension, but this was new. Years of painful suffering, then complete relief of pain, an 80% within days. Now, this was a live-in program where, you know, patients were actually given meals. You know, that happens when, you know, and you know what happens when they were sent home, of course, and kind of had to go back into the real world. Well, the 17 folks were followed for years. And in all except one, the relief of painful neuropathy continued or improved even further. How'd they get that kind of compliance with a strict plant-based diet? Because it works. Oh, man, that's just crazy town. You know, one of the most painful and frustrating conditions to treat in all of medicine, and 3/4 of them cured in a couple of days with a natural, non-toxic, in fact, beneficial treatment, a diet composed of whole plant foods, that should have been front page headline news. Don't you think that should have been front page headline news? I think so. When I think about my own grandmother, when I was a little girl, I remember seeing her. She was always hobbling and limping and pricking her finger and checking and sticking and needling. And I didn't know what it meant. Mom always just said, well, Nana has diabetes. Nana has diabetes. I heard that my whole life growing up. I never knew what it meant. When I got older and I realized what it meant, and then I thought about what we ate every freaking day. Ham, bacon, sausage for breakfast. Chicken tacos for lunch. Well, back then they were just ground beef tacos for lunch, you know, or bologna sandwiches. Couldn't even get worse than that. Can't get worse than bologna, really. Well, maybe salami or pepperoni would be worse. I'm not sure. And then, of course, steaks for dinner, you know, and my little Nana every day. Oh, she loved her cheese and her ice cream and her milk and all of that stuff. She had no idea. And then just didn't know. You know, this was probably early 70s. And I think she died in 1979. She did die in 1979. And probably the nutrition information was really just starting to come out at that point. And had that been front page headline news? I don't know. Maybe she could have gotten some relief from that. Really appreciate that you're here with me on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. You know, I get going. I can't help it. This is, I'm so passionate about this. I want to tell everyone. I want to say, look, you know, eat your veggies. And on all of us, every single one of us, I think if you were asked, you know, hey, do you think you could improve your diet? Everyone would say, oh yeah, I could definitely improve my diet, myself included, because I eat too much fat. That I already know, because I love coconut butter and peanut butter and almond butter and avocados. And I eat, and you know, just like I use too many fats and oils in my diet, all vegan, all plant-based, but you know, fat is fat. And I've heard that the only fat you wear is the fat you eat. And that just drives me nuts, because I'm like, oh my God, I already say no to so many things. I don't want to say no to that, but I probably am going to have to at some point, you know. But what I want you to hear is you're in charge. I'm in charge. And so you know what? This is instructive for me, right? Because here I am talking about being healthy, and carrying 15 extra pounds around is not healthy. It's just not. So it irritates me, because I know there's a way to improve. And I know if I was to ask you, could you improve your diet? You'd say, yeah. And then I'd say, well, what could you do? Oh, I could probably eat more fruits and vegetables. That's right. You already know. Look at you. You're so good. You already know what you could do to improve your diet. You could eat more fruits and vegetables. Well, do it. Don't just say it. Go ahead and do it. And thank you again for being here on KCIW. This little Curry Coast community radio station is made possible by donors all around the Curry County area and from our generous sponsors. And you know, underwriters, really, they're not sponsors, they're underwriters. And it's so cool to be able to come into the studio and share life-saving, life-transforming, life-helping information that, you know, this is my radio show. It helps me too. I mean, I'm talking to you and hopefully you're learning something, but I'm learning something too. Every time I come in here and get behind this microphone, I learn something. And I'm also having a whole lot of fun. And hey, you know what? If you think it would be fun to do a radio show, we're looking for people to do radio shows. You want to come in and talk about cars or earthquakes or geography or stars or, you know, the climate or whatever, arts, music, whatever you want to talk about, what's on your heart? You know, obviously nutrition's on my heart, but what's on your heart? Because whatever it is that's on your heart, you could come in and have your own radio show and talk about it too. Hey, you can't just come in and have a radio show. Like, you got to get vetted and stuff, and then you got to actually show up and do it. But if you have something to say, someone wants to hear you. Someone's out there that needs to hear the message that you have to deliver. And that's why I do this, because I know one person out there, just one, this information might make a difference for them. And again, I'm not the scientist and I'm not the doctor. I read a lot. I study a lot. I hold certificates in nutrition, but this is my passion. And nutritionfacts.org just happens to be the number one place on the web that I find unbiased scientific observation that's refreshed every single day. It's fascinating. Well, let's go back to this idea of front page headline news for people who went on to a beneficial treatment, whole plant foods, and their diabetic neuropathy was cured immediately. Well, how could that nerve damage be reversed so suddenly? Well, it didn't appear to be the improvement in blood sugars, because it took about 10 days for the diet to control the diabetes, whereas the pain was gone in as few as 4 days. Now, there are several mechanisms by which a total vegetarian diet can alleviate the problem of diabetic neuropathy as well as the diabetes itself. The most interesting speculation was that they thought it could be the trans fats naturally found in meat and dairy that could be causing an inflammatory response. They found a significant percentage of the fat under the skin of those who eat meat or even just dairy and eggs was trans fats. Trans fats stuck inside their bodies under their skin, whereas those who had been on a strictly plant-based diet, whole food plant-based diet, had no detectable trans fats within their bodies. That's so crazy. That That's unbelievable. That's just crazy. That's unbelievable. Oh gosh, check this out. The researchers stuck needles in the buttocks of people eating different diets, and 9 months or more on a strict plant-based diet appeared to remove all trans fat from their bodies, or at least their butts. But the pain didn't take 9 months to get better, more like 9 days, right? Crazy. So more likely, the amazing reversal was due to an improvement in blood flow. Nerve biopsies taken from diabetics with severe progressive neuropathy shown to have arterial disease within the nerves. There are blood vessels within our nerves that can get clogged up too, depriving the nerves of oxygen, presumably leading them to cry out in pain. Within months, though, improvements in blood rheology, meaning the blood or the ease at which blood flows on a plant-based diet, may play a prominent role in the reversal of diabetic neuropathy. Wow. Plant-based diets may also lower the level of IGF-1, which is insulin growth factor 1, within the eyeballs of diabetics and decrease the risk of retinopathy, diabetic vision loss, as well. But what about treating retinopathy? Well, Kempner at Duke used a plant-based diet composed of mostly rice and fruit to document for the first time the reversal of diabetic retinopathy in a quarter of his patients, something never even thought possible. For example, a 60-year-old diabetic woman already blind in one eye can only see contours of large objects with the other, effectively blind. 5 years later, on the diet, instead of it getting worse, it got better. She could then make out faces, see signs, start to read large newspaper print, in addition to being off all insulin, normal blood sugars, and a 100-point drop in her cholesterol. Wow. I've talked about that before on this show because that's such an important study. The most effective way to avoid diabetic complications is to eliminate the diabetes in the first place. And this is often feasible for those type 2 diabetics who can make an abiding commitment to daily exercise and a healthy enough diet. Type 2 diabetes can be reversed, can be cured, eliminated with diet, and so can some of its complications. Since the initial report of neuropathy reversal was published over 20 years ago, it's been replicated by other researchers. So why didn't we learn about this in medical school? The neglect of this important work by the broader medical community is little short of unconscionable. I totally agree with that. You know, they still don't teach nutrition in medical schools. They don't teach it. I mean, docs have to go out on their own to find this information. Now there's a whole new field of medicine that's just coming up. It's really starting to grow big now. It's called functional medicine. And it's where the docs, they are really paying attention to what it is that we're putting into our mouths and what we're bathing ourselves in. Now, I came up with a word because I'm a wordsmith originally. That's kind of, you know, what I do. I love it. I love words. And I came up with a word because I realized that we have this microbiome, right? You've heard of the microbiome. It's this idea that only 10% of the cells that make up your human body are actual human cells. What? Yeah. 10 times more cells in your body are microbiota than are human. So I call us humicrobians. That's right. We are humicrobians because the vast majority of mass and volume of our cells is not human in nature. So, wow. It is unconscionable when we think about what we're putting into our bodies and that docs don't even get to learn about that in medical school. But why is that? Well, because medical schools are funded by drug companies. And there's no money in drug companies for you to eat apples every day. And you know I talk about apples a lot because apples are hugely transformative in your diet. They can be, but you got to eat them. You can't just think about them. You got to actually eat them. Right on. Well, let's talk about Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's is perhaps, it best captures the difference between lifespan and health span. Dr. Greger says, who cares if you live to be 100 if in the final years you don't even recognize yourself in the mirror? In 1901, Auguste was taken to an insane asylum by her husband. She was described as delusional, forgetful, disoriented. And she tragically could not carry out her homemaking duties anymore. She was seen by a Dr. Alzheimer and was to become the case that made his a household name. Now, on autopsy, Dr. Alzheimer described the plaques and tangles that would go on to characterize the disease. But lost in the excitement of discovering a new condition, a clue may have been overlooked. He described atherosclerotic changes, hardening of the arteries, within her brain. We typically think of artery clogging in the heart, but as we saw with the spine and the nerves, atherosclerosis involves virtually the entire human organism, our entire vascular tree from top to bottom, including our brain. And one of the most poignant examples of the systemic nature of clogged arteries is the link between coronary heart disease, degenerative brain disease, and Alzheimer's, dementia. Just as a heart attack or brain attack, stroke, can be significantly prevented, one can think of Alzheimer's as a mind attack. Mind attack, like heart attacks and strokes, needs to be prevented by controlling vascular risk factors, like high blood pressure and cholesterol, controlling chronic blood hyperfusion, the lack of adequate blood flow to the brain in the years before the onset of Alzheimer's. We now have, Dr. Greger says, a substantial body of evidence strongly suggesting and associating atherosclerotic vascular disease with Alzheimer's. Autopsy studies, for example, have shown that individuals with Alzheimer's have significantly more atherosclerotic narrowing of arteries within their brain. This is what cerebral arteries look like, open, clean, allowing blood to flow. Remember, if I'm talking about any kind of a chart or a graphic, you're going to find that on nutritionfacts.org by looking up the video from table to able. It's so easy. The search bar is right at the top. You seriously are going to just type in from table to able and bam, this is going to pop right up. You can even not even watch the video. You can just click right down to the graphs and charts. So he says the cerebral arteries should look open, clean, allowing blood to flow. And then you can see what the atherosclerosis in our brain arteries looks like when it's clogged with fat and cholesterol, closing off the artery, restricting blood flow within our brain. Well, what kind of arteries do you want in your brain? This reduction in blood flow can starve the brain of oxygen, causing silent little mini strokes, brain atrophy, shrinkage. The cumulative effects appear to play a pivotal role in the development of Alzheimer's. But what about the role of metals in Alzheimer's? Well, the metals appear to just aggravate the detrimental effects of the high intake of saturated fat and cholesterol. What about the so-called Alzheimer's gene, APOE4? I think it's actually APOE4E, but I'm not sure on that. It says APOE4 here. Diet trumps genes. Three words, say it again, diet trumps genes. The highest frequency of Alzheimer's gene in the world is Nigeria, but they also have some of the lowest Alzheimer's rates. To understand why, one has to understand the role of APOE. What does the gene do? The Alzheimer's gene makes the principal cholesterol carrier in the brain. But if your cholesterol is low enough because your diet is low enough in animal fat, if you center your diet around grains and vegetables, then changes in cholesterol can lead to changes in gene expression. Coming back to that idea of a minute ago that we just said, diet trumps genes. Well, so just because we've been dealt some bad genetic cards doesn't mean we can't reshuffle the deck with diet. Isn't that amazing? So according to the latest guidelines for the prevention of Alzheimer's, the two most important things we can do is cut down our consumption of meat, dairy, and junk and replace them with vegetables, beans, fruits, and whole grains. That's the best science we have for the prevention of Alzheimer's disease. Wait, grains? Protective of the brain? Dr. Greger says, I had the distinction of serving this year, this is a year or so ago, a couple years ago, on a panel with Grain Brain author Dr. Perlmutter, who sold lots of books claiming that carbs are destroying our brains. But what does the science show? Take Japan, for example, where the prevalence of dementia has shot up over the last few decades. And the blame for this increase in Alzheimer's? Increases in animal products. Traditional diets weighted toward vegetable products like grains, away from animal products. But since 1960, the diet in Japan has changed from a more traditional rice-based diet to one with a preponderance of meat. So less grain equaled more Alzheimer's. The dietary factor most strongly associated with Alzheimer's was the consumption of animal fat. So the link between diet and dementia can be characterized less as grain brain and more as meathead. Oh, that's awesome. And you know what's funny is When I was a kid growing up, that was my nickname. I don't know why. My mom called me meathead. I was actually always pretty offended by that, but she still calls me meathead sometimes. I'm like, dude, mom, I'm not a meathead. Like, I'm actually a gearhead. I'm a motorhead. I'm a science head. Like, I'm anything but a meathead. I don't even eat meat anymore. Come on, mom. It's been years and years. Oh, it's kind of funny. But here we are on the Ocean Mist Power Hour on KCIW talking about not meat. Well, yeah, we're talking about meat, but we're talking about eating fruits, grains, nuts, seeds, vegetables, you know, rice, that kind of stuff. Interestingly, a similar analysis in China arrived at the same conclusion. On the basis of these findings, the rates of Alzheimer's and dementia will continue to increase unless dietary patterns change to those with less reliance on animal products. This is consistent with data showing that those who eat vegetarian are 2 to 3 times less likely to develop dementia, and the longer one eats meat-free, the lower one's risk falls. In fact, where are the lowest rates of Alzheimer's in the world? Rural India. It may be no coincidence that the country with the lowest rates of Alzheimer's has among the lowest rates of meat consumption. About 40% of the people eat meat-free and egg-free diets that are high-grain, high-bean, high-carb diets. Population studies have found a protective, strongly protective role of grains in relation to Alzheimer's disease and including gluten-containing grains, not just rice. The science shows the exact opposite of what one might read in the popular press. In other words, don't pass on the grain, pass the grain to spare the brain. Isn't that interesting? The link between arterial blockage and Alzheimer's is good news because atherosclerosis can be prevented and treated. So maybe Alzheimer's can be prevented and treated as well. Well, let's put it to the test. If you follow people who are just starting to lose their mental faculties, the cognition of those with the least artery clogging in their brain remains pretty stable over the years, but those with more cholesterol buildup got worse. And those with the most blockage rapidly declined. And the same with the ability to carry out activities of daily living, like dressing oneself. And arterial disease doubled the progression to Alzheimer's. In summary, an inefficient blood supply to the brain can have very grave consequences on brain function. But does treatment of vascular risk factors like high blood pressure and high cholesterol make a difference? Well, we didn't know until now. 300 patients, Dr. Greger says, with Alzheimer's and those with their vascular risk factors treated showed significantly less decline, slowed progression of their disease. It is often said that the goal of medicine is to provide patients with hope, and when there is no hope, to offer understanding. Well, for the first time in history, and in the history particularly of this disorder, we have the chance to provide Alzheimer patients with hope. Now, let me close with cancer, a leading cause of death and disability. How many years of life are lost to potentially preventable cancers? Every year, more than 5 million expected years of life in the United States are lost to 3 disabling cancers alone: lung cancer, colorectal cancer, and breast cancer. Therefore, Dr. Greger says, identifying and improving strategies for prevention of cancer remains a priority, especially since no more than 2% of all human cancer is attributable to purely genetic factors. So 2% may be in our genes, but the rest may involve external factors, particularly our diet. I wish we had like another whole hour just to dig down and unpack that one paragraph. Dr. Greger says, you know, our skin is about 20 square feet. Our lungs, if you actually flatten them out, are like 1,000 square feet of surface area. But our intestines, 3,000 feet, if you include all the little folds, 3,000 square feet. So what we eat is our primary interface with the outside world, with our external environment. Now, the most comprehensive study or summary of evidence on diet and cancer ever compiled recommends we eat foods of plant origin to help prevent cancer. This means centering our diets around whole plant foods, not just whole grains and beans every day, but every meal. And when it came to foods that increase cancer risk, they were similarly straightforward. Unlike some other dietary changes that kind of wimp out and just advise people to moderate their intake of bad foods, like eat less candy, the cancer guidelines did not mince words when it came to the worst of the worst. For example, don't just Minimize soda intake. Avoid it. Don't just cut back on bacon and hot dogs and ham and sausage lunch meat. Avoid processed meats, period, because data do not show any level of intake that can confidently be shown not to be associated with risk. Even small amounts may be risky. Processed meat can not only be thought of as a powerful multi-organ carcinogen, but may also increase the risk of heart disease and diabetes. Red meat was bad, but processed meat was worse. And that included white meat, like chicken and turkey slices. So, with more heart disease, cancer, and diabetes, it's no surprise processed meat consumption is associated with risk of death, included even at small amounts. In Europe, they calculated that reduction of processed meat consumption to less than half a hot dog's worth a day would prevent more than 3% of all deaths. This was the second largest prospective study on diet and cancer ever. A study of 400,000 people, well, the largest ever, 600,000, was done right here in the U.S., the AARP study. They found the preventable fraction to be even higher, suggesting that 20% of heart disease deaths among women, for example, could be averted if the highest consumers cut down to less than a quarter strip of bacon's worth a day. That's a lot of death. So what does the industry think about all this? In the journal Meat Science, the industry acknowledged that the cancer prevention guidelines now urge people to avoid processed meat, a statement that represents a clear and present danger for the meat industry. Processed meat, they say, is a social necessity. How could anyone live without bologna, right? The challenge for the meat industry is to find a way to maintain the consumption of these products while somehow not damaging public health. You know, that's about all we've got time for today. I'd like to just say this, you know, processed meats, ham, bacon, sausage, lunch meats, all of those things are literally a class 1A carcinogen. That's in the same category as tobacco and plutonium. So if you're into tobacco and plutonium, far out, eat all the processed meat you want. If you don't like those things and you don't like cancer, maybe you ought to cut those things out. Well, thank you for being here with me on KCIW 100.7 FM on your radio dial. Broadcasting out of Brookings Harbor, the gateway of the great Pacific Northwest right here in Oregon, about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S., home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and the nicest people you'll ever meet. Where the mountains and the redwoods meet the sea, Harbor Brookings is home to me. I'm your host, Misty Young. Thank you for joining me on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, and thank you to the entire KCIW sound engineering and production crew. Have a great time. We'll see you next week.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.